Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Say What Author Spotlights, a division of Say What Book Club. I am your host, Tamika Patrice Kane, and today we have a special guest, Ms. Beverly Jenkins. For those of you who are not familiar with Beverly, she is an award-winning author of Black historical romance novels. Noted as one of the top 50 African-American authors by the AALDC, and also an NAACP Image Award nominee, the Say What Book Club featured Destiny Surrender this month, and Beverly has graciously agreed to come on our show and talk about her book and her journey as an author. Beverly Jenkins, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Oh, thanks. I didn't realize when I was first starting to read your work about 15 years ago that you were just coming on the scene. And one of the things I can say about your work is that it has never disappointed me.
Oh,
how many books have you written?
I think, 30, 33, 34.
Oh,
I mean, that's something
wow.
You'd have to ask the fans. They keep up with that kind of stuff. but, yeah, novellas, different genres. I've made my name doing the historicals, but I also have done two young adults, do romantic suspense, and then also women's fiction, which is the Blessing series, which was nominated for the NAACP Image Award.
Awesome. What does it take to be a prolific producer of high-quality writing?
Well, you have to have a good imagination. You have to have those stories inside of you. I have enough characters and story arcs to probably take me into two lives. You have to write good books.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't just throw any old thing out there. You have to have something that connects with the readers, that connects with them on a lot of different levels. I have not only the great love stories, but the African American history that's woven in through the historicals is also a good hook for my readers.
How do you keep yourself from falling into a rut? You know, with someone who's written over 30 books, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I try and give them a different flavor with each book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can only write, love scenes. I mean, there's only so many ways that you can describe,
mm-hmm.
you know, those kinds of things. But if you can write a great story and if you take those love scenes out and you still have a great story,
mm-hmm.
then for me that's the measure of a great story. I try and vary who my people are. I don't give you the same hero. I don't give you the same heroine. Because people are different. I try and make my characters not necessarily characters, but people. And when you deal with your characters in that way, you have a tendency not to repeat yourself.
That's awesome. At what age did you begin writing?
When did I begin writing?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to be a writer. I had
no
dream to be a writer. But my first writing experience, I was the editor of my elementary school newspaper. In the fourth grade,
wow.
Jones Elementary on the east side of Detroit. And I had a English teacher at Cass who really liked the story. She had us write a story, and she really, really liked it. And she wanted me to enter into this citywide contest. And, you know, when you're 15, or at least for me, 15, I had no confidence. I was like, well, no thank you. So my dream was to just work in a library. That was all that's all I ever wanted to do in life was books. Books were my world. When my relatives died, I got their books. Read my way through Mark Twain Library in Detroit on Gratiot and Burns, and went to Michigan State University and worked in the library there and wound up working in the graduate library for many, many years. So, you know, that was all I ever wanted. And then we moved to Ann Arbor, and we moved to Ypsilanti, and I was working in Ann Arbor at the Park Davis Pharmaceuticals and was on the reference desk. And I had been toying with this story. I read everything, but I had been toying with this little romance, and one of the women there who had been published encouraged me to get my story published, and I was like, yeah, right, because there were no African American historicals of, of, you know, any kind of out there then. Sandra Kitt had her Adam and Eva out there, but insofar as big, big books, big historicals, there was nothing out there like that. So she harassed me, oh, every 3 days, and so just to get her to shut the hell up, I went ahead and found an agent and was lucky to find Vivian Stevens, who was a big-time editor at Dell back then. She's the founder of Romance Writers of America, sort of the one who really put American historicals and American romance on the map, and she had retired, and she was doing agenting. And I sent her my manuscript, and she called me back like 3 days later. And said she wanted, it was awesome. We were doing the happy dance in the library, girl. you know, screaming and yelling and all of that. But it took us a long time to sell it because they didn't have a box for it. Here you had a 19th century African-American story that was not based in the South and that was not based on slavery. So I got enough rejections to probably paper my kitchen. And, you know, I think we all start out that way, you know, regardless of who we are, you know, what genre we're writing. If we're a first-time author, it's kind of hard. But the letters kept saying, great story, but, I didn't know what to do with it. So finally, and a blessing for me, Ellen Edwards, who was at Avon Books, which was the largest and most prestigious romance publisher back then, and in my mind still is, they took me on and bought the book on my husband's birthday, January 3rd, 1993.
Aww.
Really? Yep. And it was published later on that summer, along with the great ladies who came out with Arabesque that summer, Donna Hill and Frances Ray and Brenda Jackson and Betty Ford. And we call it the 1994 was the summer of black love.
So wonderful.
Yeah, and we all have been still out here, you know, not necessarily churning them out, but producing great, great stories and amassing a fabulous, fabulous readership on the way.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
You do good stuff. And you've been one of my favorites, sir, for years. And so
bless you. Thank
the idea
you.
Kept coming up for me to start this book club. You know, there was no way I was going to not have anyone but you be the first featured read and featured spotlight. So I'm so excited to be interviewing you.
I'm so honored.
Reading your books. Oh, thanks.
So honored.
So you talk about the rejections. You know, what kind of advice would you give or encouragement would you give to, you know, to those who are out there who are in that process of getting all these rejection letters and yet they know they actually have a really good product. They just need somebody to take
a
chance.
Well, you just
got
to keep going through. I mean, I tell people, if you have a thin skin, you can't be in this business. You take up knitting or something, you know. but, you know, you have to persevere. And, you know, it's like that that old Negro spiritual, you know, don't let nobody turn you around. And you have to keep at it. And you also, instead of, you know, watching the mailbox, start that second story. Because you are more likely to get published if you have more than one story. I mean, you have a lot of people who are one-book wonders, but they are one-book wonders. So if you want to build a career as a writer, then you need to have more than one story in you. So start working on those other things. I have what I call, you know, and a lot of authors have, we call the drawer. And in that drawer are, you know, partials for this or a scene of that. And you may never know, you may not know for years where that particular piece is going to go or how it's going to fit. When I did the Blessing series, I had this story about this African-American woman who had gotten this huge divorce settlement. And, you know, and I wrote this thing, oh, I don't know, 15, 18 years ago. But I had no idea who she was or where she was going, so stuck it in a drawer. And when it time came to do the women's section, which is what the Blessing series is, I finally knew who Bernadine Brown was and where she fit in my cast of characters. So just persevere. Don't be discouraged. Keep sending your stuff out. Work on different stuff. Know that you are not in the boat alone. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of other people out there who are struggling and striving just like you are. So, you know, in three words or two words, don't give up. Three words, don't give up.
Okay. You guys heard it from a master. Don't give up, she said.
Well, you can't. You can't. Either way. I know. If you give up, then we may never get to see you read your story.
That's
so,
right.
You know, when we readers, and I'm a reader also, we are always looking for fabulous reads. So if you give up, I may not get a chance to put you on my Kindle. So,
and we can't have that.
Can't have that.
No. So we've gone through your journey here, and I'm assuming at this point you're making your living solely from writing. Am I right?
Yeah, I am. I'm making a pretty good living. God is good, and the readers are good, and as long as they keep buying, I keep writing.
When you reached the point where you could retire from everything but the writing, tell us what that felt like.
Well, you know, it was not necessarily that. Let's see, how old is that boy now? He's 27. 26 years ago. No, he was 27. So 21 years ago,
okay.
We adopted my son. And he was not ready for prime time. Lots of issues, lots of, you know, those letters that they put behind kids sometimes. And I was blessed to be married to a fabulous guy who was making enough money economically and all that for me to stay home and raise this boy. So I basically stopped working. I don't know, he was in the first grade, so 5 years old.
Okay.
So I was a stay-at-home mom with my daughter, too, and they're six years apart.
Wonderful.
So I had my hand in my husband's pocket down to his socks.
Got it.
You know, yeah, he was, you know, my biggest support. I lost him to cancer 10 years ago. I was blessed in that I had that support. And a lot of times there's a lot of ladies, and, you know, and men too, who don't get that kind of support. But I always told people that, you know, my blessings came through that son. So I went about it in a different way. But, you know, now I'm home by myself. Ain't nobody here but mama. You know, the e-books have made quite a difference economically for me because of the backlist is selling like hotcakes. So, you know, getting that check every month from Amazon is a wonderful thing.
I bet it is. Yes. And when that starts happening for me, I'll make sure I'll send you a little note about it. Okay?
Oh, please do. Because, you know, major publishers only pay you twice a year.
Oh, really?
So until I started doing this e-thing, I was getting a check in April, and then you didn't get another check till October.
Oh,
and when you first start out, you are not making me. Don't quit your day job because, you know, you have to pay that advance back before you start making any money. And, you know, when I started in 1994, I was making something like 27 cents a book.
Okay.
So, you know, you needed a job or a good husband to be able to stay in the game. So, but, you know, if you're in it, basically you're not in it. Anybody who thinks that they're going to get into this business and make a lot of money, they're not in it for the right reason.
Okay, y'all, did y'all hear that?
You know,
we have all kinds of interesting things that come up, you know, and folks need to hear that from a veteran.
You know, if you are not in this for the love of the story, it's going to be hard. Because if I was not making any money and I was still working 9 to 5, I would still be writing. I would be putting that thing on a Xerox machine and handing that stuff out to my girlfriends to read.
Right.
But you cannot be in this if you think you're going to write that one book and quit your job. And you're going to go out and buy you a, you know, an SUV, or you're going to buy you a house in wherever. Ain't going to happen. You know, you got to be
really
in this for the...
I appreciate that level of candidness, you know, and
you
know,
honesty. You got to be in it. Like I said, 27 cents a book. Come on now.
I know.
I ain't even going to buy big pens, let alone an Escalade. So you have to be in this because if you don't write, you go mad. Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna stop talking now. You can ask.
That's good. You're singing my song here. Now, this is good stuff. But one of the things I've always really appreciated about you is your willingness to interact with your fans. And I met you briefly, just once. Actually, it was last year, at that cute little cupcake place in Belleville when you did your book signing for Embrace.
The place burned down the next day, right?
You're kidding.
She had a fire a few days later, you know, just, you know, that was her dream. So, but anyway,
I didn't realize that. And so, you know, periodically I would just write to you, and you were always just so gracious to write back, and you never felt like a stranger to me.
Yeah.
And I see the interactions that you have with the rest of your fans, you know, on your page and, you know, and things like that, and I would say that others feel the same way I do. How do you keep those connections going? I call them with your people. You know?
Yeah, with my peeps.
With your peeps.
I am nothing without them. So it behooves me, as a word for you, to be as gracious and as grateful and as thankful as I can be, because I am. They helped put my daughter through college. They helped buy this new car I got here in the driveway. When my husband was making his transition, they were the ones who lifted me up. So for me, you know, and I know a lot of authors don't feel that way. You know, they feel like, you know, the fans are, you know, a necessary evil. But to me, you know, and I tell them all the time, when I count my blessings, I count them twice.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah.
You know, because they are, you know, and we have fun, and we have, you know, we got a book club we do twice a month. And, you know, they on my page because, you know, basically they don't know what I'm going to do next. I mean, it could be, I mean, if they come to you, what is this crazy woman doing today? You know, I call it crack book. You know, Facebook is crack book because I am definitely, you know, addicted to this electronic connection to my fans. And they will tell me, Miss B, you're on deadline. Get off Facebook. You know, they're sitting in the box with my editor, everybody yelling at me. But, you know, they'll come on and say, Miss B, did you eat today? You know, because they know that, you know, once I get on deadline, you know, between the kids and my kids and the fans, they're trying to keep me alive. But I am so blessed by them, I just don't even know what to do. You know, it's a wonderful connection. And they give me as much joy as I give them.
That's beautiful. So for those of you who are not familiar with this book that we've read for the month, it was Destiny Surrender, which is actually part two of a three-part series. The first one was Destiny's Embrace. And, you know, I don't always read series. I tend to just kind of read, you know, like books that are solo. But what would you say are some of the keys to writing a good series? I really enjoyed it, and both of them. But even if I hadn't read Destiny's Embrace first, I still could have gotten into the second book, just a standalone book.
Yeah, it would stand alone by itself. Well, you know, series is a thing now. And the readers are really, really, really into these series. You do, and I think you keep them interesting by, you know, once again, varying your characters, but maybe having one thread that goes through. And for this series, the thread is the mother. Alonza is, she's the first person we meet in the first book. Well, you know, for her family, we meet the heroine first. But everybody wants to know, you know, is she going to get married? What's going to happen to her? Is she going to, you know, is she going to scream during her, you know, the wedding
mm-hmm.
night and all that? You know, that's the big question for this book. But you connect them. You give them the love. People like the family-based series when you're doing romance. But then there are a lot of different themes that you can tie it to. We've got women who are doing series with firemen and then series with brothers and series with people living in the same apartment building. I mean, there are only so many plots. And it's your job as a good writer or a good author is how you spin it. So you try and spin it like nobody else has spun it before and give them something to put their teeth into. People have a tendency to think that romance is lightweight. Wrong. Some of the best authors, I think, are in my genre. And a lot of these women go off and write different genres. Sandra Brown was started out as a romance writer. Tess Gerritsen. All of them writing different things now. But I think that being able to write about the human condition and to be able to write about those emotions is what makes them such great writers now. And romance writers do it like nobody else. And we brought $1.3 billion to the table last year.
My goodness. Wow.
We keep the,
awesome.
Lights on at publishing. Yeah. You know, we the ones paying for the heat and the lights.
Right.
Yeah. We sell more than mystery and westerns and science fiction combined.
Wow.
$1.3 billion last year. So a lot of women and men. I got a lot of brothers who are reading my historicals. Because romance is one of the few genres where brothers are treated well. You know, you're going to find some stand up, manned up. I got a job. I'm taking care of my family, paying my taxes, mowing my grass. We don't do the brother bashing in romance. We leave that to somebody else.
That's right.
And a lot of brothers, they love the westerns that I do because they're so seldom put into roles as heroes. And I love me some brothers, so as you can probably
me
tell
too.
By my books. So
yeah, I love your brothers, too. Love them.
Everybody love my brothers.
That's right.
The brothers love my brothers. So
they should.
Yeah, I think so too. Like I said, it's a way to lift them up too. So I have a lot of men who read my romances.
It's so wonderful. So what can we look forward to in the very near future for you? What else are you working on?
Book 5 of the Blessing series will be out in late April. Excuse me. And I am, if I can stay off crack book and get this... third Destiny book done. The third brother is very, very different from the other two. He's the youngest brother. Had some issues shanghaied when he was 18 years old, and some stuff happened. So he's got a very dark kind of a personality, whereas the other two brothers were a little bit lighter. Personality-wise, we're not talking skin tone here, people. We're talking, you know, personality. But I am having a ball. I saw the cover. Haven't had a chance to share it yet. I'm waiting for an okay from New York before I can share that, and the sisters are going to go nuts.
Okay. I can't wait.
It's awesome. It's an awesome cover. I told them I want it because she's a, you know, supposed to be a woman pirate, so I told him I wanted a woman in a ball gown with a rapier. And so, that's what we get. You know, the people in our art department are just fabulous. So, like I said, so I'm it's due next month. So I got a lot of other stuff on my plate, too, but this is what's paying the mortgage, so I'm trying to honor the date that it's due and get it in. And I'll be in Savannah in 2 weeks at the Black Heritage Festival, so anybody within sound of my voice down there can come out and see me on February 6th. I'll be at Savannah State University doing a writing class. I'll be selling books, and then have a lecture that night on the Great Exodus of 1879. So I'm trying to keep keep it fresh, girl. Keep it fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's working. So what genres do you enjoy reading?
I'm a fantasy reader.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Dragons and swords and quests.
Uh-huh.
And, Jim Butcher and Ilona Andrews and Jeanine Frost. And
okay.
Because, you know, I don't read as much romance as I used to because
mm-hmm.
it's sort of like when you work at McDonald's, you don't want to eat hamburgers.
So
I have always been, like I said, I'm an avid reader of just about every genre. I read mysteries, I read, you know, women's fiction, I read straight fiction, I read, you know, science fiction, I read fantasy. But my favorite genre is fantasy sci-fi, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is there any one person or in particular whose work has impacted or influenced your writing?
I think I don't think there's ever one person that I can point to. Just the body of things that I've read over my lifetime. And then being given this gift, because to me it is a gift. We are all gifted with different, all of us are gifted with different things. And mine happens to be writing. But everybody that I've read from, because I read every book in that library at Mark Twain.
Wow.
Every book in that library from started with the kiddie books to the young adult books to the adult books. So by the time I was probably 14 when I was at Barber Junior High, I had read every book in that library.
Wow.
Zane Grey, Kingsley Amis, you know, I'm a big Shakespeare fan. I mean, nobody told me that a little black girl from the east side of Detroit wasn't supposed to be reading Shakespeare.
that's right.
You know, and Shakespeare is just, talk about, you know, drama. Soap opera's got nothing on the great bill. So everything that I have read or am reading, my Kindle is just bulging with stuff waiting for me to get through. Because I can't write, I can't read while I'm writing because it interferes with my voice.
Okay.
But everything that I read, you know, it helps is what I guess I should say. Helps me be a better writer. Keeps me fresh. I just love to read. That's all I ever want to do is books. And this is like a cherry on the top.
Do you work on more than one book at a time?
No. Okay. I make, you know, characters come and tap me on the shoulder and say, hello, can you write my story? And it's like, I'm in the middle of something. You need to take a seat. The green room is down the road. Yeah. But
right,
I will
write
it down and put it in a drawer and come back. I can't. But, you know, I have girlfriends who do different stuff in different, you know, can write two books at a time. The late Leslie Esdale, L.A. Banks, was a really good friend of mine. And she was living in her grandfather's old brownstone. And, you know, she wrote romance, but she also wrote the fantasy stuff. But she couldn't write them in the same room. So she would write romance in one room, and she would write the L.A. Bank stuff, the vampires and all that, in a different room, she said, because of the difference in the energy. So I can't do, I got to do one thing. I'm doing good getting that one thing out. So I do one book at a time, but the other characters are in my head tapping their foot with their fingers, with their arms crossed, you know, waiting for me to get done so that they can get their turn. So, but I love what I do. I really do.
And it shines through, you know, and you can tell when someone has put time and effort and real energy, you know, into what they're doing versus someone who just throws something out. You know, the difference can always be felt.
You know, you got to have
something random about yourself.
Random. I'm looking out here at my garden that's covered with snow. I like the garden. I spend way too much time at church. I'm on 1,000 different committees. But that's because I'm grateful for all the blessings that I get. Two kids, widow, oldest of seven kids.
Oh, really?
Yeah, oldest of seven. Mama's still alive and driving, and she's 85 years old. And
wow.
She reads a whole lot of books, too. In fact,
yeah,
she's in a book club, you know, 85-year-old woman in a book club.
That's awesome.
So I get that reading thing, I think, from her. But having a blessed life. Too scared to complain, girl. Too scared to complain.
I know it. I have just a couple other questions for you, and then I'll let you go. What causes are dear to your heart?
What causes are dear to my heart? Literacy, of course. Adoption. That's the theme of the blessing series. And I got so many emails after the first book from adoptive parents, from adopted kids. It got to the point where, you know, I was just crying all the time reading these emails. People sending me pictures of their kids. So that's a big thing for me, because the majority of kids who are in foster care are kids who look like me. And we who have the economics, and you don't have to be married these days, you don't have to be straight. We who have the ability to open our hearts and our homes to kids need to step up, because you never know. I mean, so many jewels are just wasting away in foster care, so that's a big thing for me. Most of my charitable dollars goes to Doctors Without Borders, which is an international medical group that goes in and treats people during wartime, mostly kids. And they don't care what side you're on. They just want to make sure you're well. So my dollars go to that, and the Detroit Rescue Mission gets the other half of all of my charitable money. So lots of, you know, not a whole lot of causes, but causes that I think make a difference.
Absolutely. Excuse me. Completely agree. I'll send you some, something just popped to my mind, but I'll email you about that.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. So what advice would you give to an author who's trying to get published, you know?
Well, we talked about not giving up. And you need to write the best book you can. I noticed on Facebook the other day, it was a young woman who was fussing about people were trying to drag her down and, you know, step on her dreams. And, you know, you never let anybody step on your dreams. But, and then another writer came on and told her that, you know, she needs to make sure that her grammar's correct, that it's correct, and all of that, and she didn't think that that was important. And the other writer was saying that she'd seen a book recently from a self-published guy who had an apology on the first page. Well, I want to apologize for all the typos and the misspelled words and the, what?
Oh, goodness. Right, right.
I mean, if you can take the time to write an apology, you need to take the time to fix that book.
Yeah.
Because you want to be embraced by the widest audience that you can see. Not whitest, widest.
Right, right.
And regardless of what color they are.
That's right.
Because readers like a good story, and they don't care who's starring in it.
That's right.
But if I'm reading your book and I can't get past the first page, because it's either too convoluted, or the spelling is off, or if you're saying where he was wearing a green shirt and you got where spelled W-H-E-R-E. So you need to polish. If you have to take a class, do so. There's no shame in that, because you're trying to make yourself better.
That's right.
Read as much as you can about the business of writing. A lot of people don't know the difference between being self-published and being published by the mainstream publishers. I was at a workshop couple years ago, and a young woman who was self-published came up to me and said, well, I talked to somebody, and they said that, you know, the people in New York not buying no books. Excuse me?
Hmm.
I said, girlfriend, they're buying books every day.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of misinformation out there. I think one of the best books out there on if you're, whether you're self-published or whether you're trying to get to New York is Becoming a Successful Author by Dietrich King
mm-hmm.
Bey. Dee used to be a mainstream editor. I call her the queen of all things self-published, her and Sylvia Hubbard, who's in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have a question, ask it. Don't just figure out, well, you know, that's not going to be a real important. I don't really need to do grammar. I don't really know how to, you know, I don't really need to know this. You need to know everything going in.
That's right.
That's like right. getting in a car and not knowing how to turn it on. But
mm-hmm.
you're going to drive it.
That's right.
So I encourage, you know, I'm always, and you know this, and people email me all the time, want to know, well, Ms. B, how do I do this? How do I do that? And I give
mm-hmm.
them homework.
That's right.
You know, and if you don't want to do that homework,
mm-hmm.
then you need to email somebody else. Because I'm not going to do it. There is no magic formula.
Right,
I can't give you the golden ticket like in
mm-hmm.
Willy Wonka
mm-hmm.
for you to take to New York or you to take to Amazon and
mm-hmm.
say, well, here, Ms. B gave me this golden ticket and I'll publish my book.
Right.
Nobody gave me no golden ticket.
Right. There you go.
But, you know,
like everybody else.
Right. You know, you gotta do the work first.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, if the gods are good and, you know, you got all your ducks in a row and,
mm-hmm.
you know, the planets are aligned in the right way at the right time on the right day.
That's right. Exactly.
Then you get to start out making 27 cents a book.
There you go.
But
and don't spend it all in one place.
Right. You know, yeah. Don't buy nothing but big pens. But it all comes down to the writing. Writing sells. Writing is going to get you where you need to go. And
mm-hmm.
you need to know what genre you're in.
Mm-hmm.
I had this young woman who was writing an urban book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything in this book was urban, and she
mm-hmm.
insisted that this was a romance. I said, honey, that's not a romance.
Yeah,
it is. It's a romance. No, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
she didn't want to listen to me. So I'm like, okay, you know. And if people don't want to listen, I'm not going to try and beat you over the head with what
mm-hmm.
my opinion is, because, you know, what do I know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but the opportunity is out there, and you just have to be prepared and polish that manuscript till, you know, you
mm-hmm.
can see it shining from the moon, and go in it, into the process with your eyes open. Like I said,
mm-hmm.
don't think you're going to sell this one book and go out and buy it, quit your job and buy an Escalade.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to happen. So that's my little long-winded advice.
Do you have any parting words for our listeners?
Write your story.
Write the story,
y'all. Write your story.
Mm-hmm.
Don't rely on anybody to tell you how. You know, I don't do, a lot of people love critique groups. I don't do critique groups.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
in the end, I'm the one that's going to have to make the decision as to how this book is going to be read.
That's right.
But everybody is different.
Right.
So find the process that works for you. If critique groups work for you, do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just because your mama says it's a good book don't mean it's a good book.
Mm-hmm.
Your mama going to
mm-hmm.
tell you that whether you write in the phone book or not. You know,
that's
so.
Right.
And don't be afraid. Jump on out there on faith.
An interesting thing that I found, that even, you know, my book came out about a year ago, and
mm-hmm.
I got rave reviews from, you know, people who would know, you know, who knew me and bought it, but they didn't really leave reviews. And so, you know, the people who were leaving reviews were actually folks who came upon the book who didn't know me.
Yeah.
And it was that same thing you were talking about, you know, where, yes, mama's going to tell you that it's good, but when people who are, you know, halfway around the world are writing you, telling you that
exactly.
it's a good product,
then you know you got a good product.
That you're onto something.
Yeah, because they don't know you from Adam, or Adam's
right.
cat, his mother loves.
Oh, here you
that.
Go. Exactly. It has been such a pleasure having you on the show.
Well,
and thank you.
It's been a great way to spend a half an hour or 40 minutes, however long we've been doing this.
Thanks.
Okay, yeah.
So,
this is
you
great.
Know, I just thank you for making yourself available to us and for consistently producing high-quality fiction, you know, for your readers to enjoy and for being so personable. And I just really can't thank you enough for that. And so,
you know,
we at Say What Book Club.
Well, you know, it's a whole lot easier being nice than having your head up your ass, right? So.
Yeah. Totally agree.
So all the authors that too, you know, be nice to people. I'm through with giving out advice.
No, but that's okay. No, that's good stuff, you know. And that's just really good stuff. So I'm sure that you know there have been so many nuggets that are just resonating, you know, in the minds and hearts of people that have come out of this interview. I can't wait to post it again.
I hope so. Well,
have it.
Yeah. Well, you know, have me back anytime. I'm always willing to share what knowledge I have learned after 20 years in this business, and I ain't afraid to help folks. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. And we at Say What Book Club and Author Spotlights want to wish you continued literary success. Again, our guest today was award-winning author Beverly Jenkins, and if you missed any part of our broadcast, you may hear the entire episode again about 5 minutes after the show is over. Thank you again for joining us, and enjoy the rest of your day.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you, babe. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome.